Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
As promised right now, caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. You're going to win a four-pack of tickets to Old Glory DC Rugby. They're taking on the Gold at Segra Field in Leesburg Saturday, March 25th at 3 p.m. Score your tickets now at oldglorydc.com. Come cheer on Old Glory DC. It is time for our Beltway Blitz. The Capitals are on deck. How about their explosion offensively last night? The Commanders with Ben standing in the hole, but we got to start you off on the hardwood. Tournament resumes tonight. Ian Eagle's going to be on the show at 5 o'clock to break down all the tournament action he's calling this evening on TBS. Speaking of calling games, our buddy Chris Nocke, who is one of the voices synonymous with Maryland basketball, joins us now. Hey, Chris, let me get a local thought first. Cooley to Georgetown, Ed Cooley leaving Providence to come to the Hoyas to replace Patrick Ewing. What do you think?
Yeah, win-win. Win for Georgetown, win for the area. Rising tide, man, lifting all boats. And I'm all for it. He's a good guy. He's a very good coach. And I think he's got some he's got a lot of work to do, that's for sure. But, you know, he operates in an era now with NIL and the portal being such that you can get results pretty quickly in this day and age, and I expect he probably will.
He and Kevin Willard had a relationship from their time in the Big East. Any chance you think they could strike a deal to make Maryland-Georgetown happen year in and year out?
100%. Yes. I got to believe that that's something that they will work on. I love it. You know, two of the best sporting events that I have been to, regular season sporting events that I've been to, have been Maryland-Georgetown games that were played in like 15, 16, 16, 17, something like that. And it's essential, man. It has to happen. It would be so great. It was must-watch TV. It was must-watch, you know, it was a great ticket to get. It was fantastic.
I wish they'd bring back the old-school BB&T Classic with a bunch of DC area teams, but I digress, Chris. Let's get to the Sweet 16 tonight. I want to start San Diego State, Alabama. What's Alabama's issue? Is there anything wrong with them as a team? They are a juggernaut.
Yeah, it's hard to find something. And, you know, Maryland tried to slow walk them. And San Diego State will do something similar, I think, although San Diego State's the team of big, strong men. And they will compete athletically with Alabama. I just don't think that they'll be able to survive the onslaught. Alabama off the bench, you know, they've just got so many guys, so much speed and athleticism, and that pace is something that's really hard to adjust to. And I don't think San Diego State has seen it all year. I just hope that these games tonight, Danny, just come close to what last night's games were.
Yeah, we'll get back to tonight in a moment. But speaking of last night, in Kansas State, Michigan State went to overtime 98-93 and gets the silver medal. Gonzaga UCLA was memorable. What'd you make of that evening of basketball?
Just stunning. The game last night, the late game, there was a time right around halftime where I'm thinking, you know what, UCLA is handling these guys. I might just call it a night early here. And I hung a little while to watch the end of the FAU-Tennessee game, and all of a sudden I turned back, and it's, let's see what happens here. It was remarkable the way that game ended, and remarkable. UCLA was gassed. They're down a bunch of players. They didn't want to play at Gonzaga's pace, but they did. And the way that game ended, Cronin is maybe the best defensive coach in America right now in college basketball, but He did not pick up the ball handlers early in that last possession, let them get all sorts of momentum going downhill and splash. It was what a remarkable comeback and a great, great game for the ages.
Chris, let's go quick hitter on the games this evening. Give me a quick scouting report what you think. Miami and Houston.
Love Miami, but Houston's too big, too strong, too good. Houston rolls.
Princeton and Creighton.
I like Creighton early this season. I thought they were great when I saw them play in Maui, but they had some injuries and struggles in the Big East, but they're back. I love Creighton in this game.
On paper, my favorite game of the night, Xavier and Texas. I think Texas is mega talented. Xavier's been really impressive as well. Who do you like and why?
Texas is my pick for a national champion, actually, and the reason is because of Marcus Carr. Point guard, guy's been around college basketball for a long time. Huge difference maker in not only in this game, but in the tournament.
Naki, let's hope tonight lives up to last night's billing. We appreciate you.
Love it. Thanks, boys.
See you, good. There's Chris Naki with us on G&D. The Beltway Blitz chugs along. Ethan Cadeau, NBCSportsWashington.com on the Caps. What an explosion last night. Where has that been? 6-1. I know the Blackhawks stink, but even playing teams that aren't good hasn't netted a 5-goal win here lately. What went right?
Well, for starters, they had fully healthy for the first time all season. I think it was the first game that John Carlson has played with Tom Wilson and Nicholas Backstrom since the playoff series to end the year last year, which helps. I mean, also Chicago starting a goaltender who literally hadn't made an NHL start in over a year helps as well. They did put up 6 goals 2 nights ago against Columbus, but found a way to fall in that one somehow, some way, after having a 3-goal lead. It was refreshing to see after having a full, healthy roster for them to only allow 1 goal and put up 6, but it does seem like it might be a little too late.
Yeah, that goal they gave up to Sherry last night reeked of rust, I would say. That was not a professional moment. Are we talking enough about John Carlson coming back? Like, I wish the Capitals were in the playoffs, and this to me would be like the lead story. It's unbelievable what he came back from, and the fact that he's doing it for a team that's outside the playoffs looking in, it's kind of hard to overstate how cool this is.
100%. And look, if John Carlson were to have come to the team 3 weeks ago and been like, look, I see how the year's going. It doesn't really make sense for me to come back for just 10 games. Let me just come back fully healthy at the beginning of next year. Everyone would have been like, okay, cool, that's totally fine. Like, we totally get it. Super scary injury. Rarely see that type of stuff. But it just shows a lot about him wanting to come back, play with this team, make a push, no matter if the odds are in their favor or not. Just try and make a push these last 9-10 games. I thought it was awesome to see. The fan reception was great when he came out on the ice. And then he said, oh, I felt rusty. It wasn't a perfect game. But he had a point, or he had 2 points. He had a goal and assist and looked like the dominant number one defenseman we've been accustomed to seeing in D.C. for so long.
In addition to getting a win and a couple points, the Caps, for the most part, got the help they were looking for last night. I don't know if I should even still be grasping because they're almost certainly not going to make the playoffs. But what would you say about what lies ahead? They still play the couple of the teams they're chasing.
Right, and Saturday's game against Pittsburgh is obviously a huge one. If they win that game, I'll be like, okay, you know what? It is possible. They can somehow sneak in the back end. I mean, like you said, they play a lot of the teams they're chasing. I think 5 of their last 9 games are against teams that are either in the playoffs or contending for a playoff spot. So we've seen crazier things. All it takes is for them to get hot. Dylan Strome 100% believes they are capable of making the playoffs. He said like 3 times yesterday, we're going to be the hottest team if we get in, et cetera, et cetera. So the confidence is still there. All the guys still believe they're capable of making a push, even if all the analytics and percentages say their chances are pretty much slim to none.
Yeah, Ethan, if they do, that's cool. I'm more every night looking for a little checklist. Did Ovi score last night? Yes, please and thank you. That's what makes me happy. And did a kid do anything? And last night, the answer was yes. Protus with an assist, but I'd like a couple of the shifts of some of the young pieces. That's what I'm looking for. If they end up winning some games here down the stretch, that's cool too, but I'm basically looking for those things. But I feel like they're still playing really, really hard. Testament to them and kind of the veteran group here, don't you think?
They're definitely playing hard. And like I said, they do still believe they can go on a run. It is great to see when the younger guys do step up, especially with a team that's an older core. We've seen a lot of these guys been in the city for 8-10 years. But yeah, when you see Rasmus Sandin come in after the trade deadline and put up 8 points in 4 games, that's awesome. Protas had that excellent pass to the on Nick Dowd's goal that was awesome to see. So I think it's the best of both worlds right now. If they can win, they're obviously playing to win. All athletes do. They're not tanking or anything like that. But it would be really cool to see if they could go on a run. I think the city would love it, because I do believe if both the Capitals and the Wizards miss the playoffs, it would be the first time all four teams in D.C. miss the playoffs the same year since before the Nationals arrived. So it would be nice.
That is not what you want to hear, by the way.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. And how is that even a thing? I mean, four teams in one city and nobody in the same year makes the playoffs. That's a hard needle to thread there. We appreciate you, Ethan. Thank you.
Appreciate you guys.
Modest, that sobering thought at the end, I guess. We appreciate it. But good as always. All right, let's talk Commanders.
All right.
Ben Standig of The Athletic. Ben, you gave me some talking points yesterday. We were discussing the draft. You brought up defensive end. I think it makes some sense. Now, I am team draft offense. Pretty much always going to be that guy in the first round as best I can. I want a tight end. I want offensive linemen. But make the case for why it wouldn't be crazy for them to take a defensive end.
Yeah, you kind of came on to talk with me about that over at The Athletic, and I wrote about it as well. I mean, I think the basic deal is, obviously, offensive line, cornerback are the biggest needs. But then you pull it back and you realize that until Chase Young has his option picked up, their top five defensive ends this year are all free agents in 2024, including Young and Sweat. I mean, that leaves you pretty vulnerable in the future. And then, you know, obviously Young and Sweat are about to get pretty expensive one way or the other. And this would be a way to get a really, hopefully a talented player who's on a cheap rookie contract, relatively cheap. So then lastly, when you look at the draft board, you know, there's need versus best player available, all that stuff. I mean, I think it's a combination of the two. But if you're really looking at it from, like, best player, it may very well be that there's an edge rusher there that trumps whatever else is on the board. And I think that's why, at a minimum, it's got to be something to consider, which, admittedly, I hadn't been doing that at all until fairly recently.
Ben, I hear you, and I thought Grant made some good points yesterday in your stead. Let me offer this one counter, though. Can you just admit it would be the worst thing ever if they did that? Like, you could just say it. It's fine. Like, blink once for help. Like, they can't do that, right?
I don't think they can do that and keep the whole kit and caboodle there. I mean, you know, whenever they do anything, I'm always conscious of the fact that, you know, this coaching staff is going to probably need to get a winning season, you would think, in order to stay where they are, unless the new owner, should that take place, decide, no, we're good. You know, four seasons in a row without a winning record does not compute to staying. Therefore, you got to maximize the opportunity and take. And even if it's a young player who's good, you know, what are we talking about here? You know, 30-40% of the snaps in games, maybe. You know, you're not maximizing the pick for this year. And I've got to imagine that this year is a huge part of whatever Rivera and company do.
Ben Standig of The Athletic here on Grant and Danny. They can't pick up Chase Young's fifth-year option, right? They're not going to do that. I've kind of talked myself into it. Makes no sense.
Yeah, I've kind of talked myself into that as well. And this is putting aside whatever you think of Chase Young. You know, if you think he's going to be the next great pass rusher, well, then maybe you'd have a different view. But if you pick Chase Young's option up, that means he's getting about $17.4 million next year, in 2024, on top of what John Allen and Payne are making. And the case has always been made by me and others that you can't really realistically keep all four. So if you do that, you're basically saying Montez Sweat is gone. And if I'm them, I'm looking at this going, right now, Montez Sweat is the better player. And if I don't pick up the option on Chase Young, I could always use the franchise tag on one of them the following year. So why not give myself that option for both rather than definitively saying I'm going with Chase Young, who, you know, again, we all get the potential, but it just has, you know, between the injury and the lack of production, lately just hasn't been, it's not clear case that he would be the one. So I think, I'm kind of leaning towards team no pickup option, but we'll see.
Ben, Grant and I actually disagreed about this yesterday. Here's how I view it. I think the first domino to fall, once they sign John Allen, I've always felt like they're only going to be able to sign one more of these guys to a market level deal at a premium position, aka a pass rusher, right? So you're basically talking about, for the sake of argument, round figures, $20 million plus. Once they sign Allen, I said, okay, one more guy. Daron Payne ended up being that guy, which I get because he was really productive last year and he was awesome, and maybe that's the new normal. I felt like that basically meant they weren't going to keep either of those other two guys. Grant disagreed. What do you think?
The salary cap gymnastics go over my head in terms of I couldn't tell you how to structure a deal, but obviously that's what they do. And, you know, there might be a way to structure it where you could keep three. Obviously, the situation here is that the edge rusher is typically the more important position for a team than the tackle. And that's why signing two tackles is, you know, viewed with a little skepticism just in general. Obviously, Allen and Payne are really, really good and probably the two best linemen they have. So I do think there's still some room to sign that guy. I think this is where the Sam Howell part of this, though, comes into play, right? If you have a quarterback on a rookie contract, especially a fifth-round pick like Howell, that gives you more room to go. And the Commanders have we're not even close to next year, but they're going to have a ton of cap space for 24, it looks like. So I think you can do that, and I think it would make sense to do it. But this also goes back to the drafting a defensive end at 16 part, because to your end, Dan, if you moved on from Young and Sweat totally, the guy at 16 would still give you that, you know, starter level ability, and that's where I think that is comes into play. So I think they would still keep one, but again, we're talking possibly new owner, new staff, new everything. So if that's all in play, then you know, who knows what they're going to think.
Great info, Ben. Thank you. We appreciate you, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
See you, dude.
Not pictured in the Blitz, the Nationals, as we get close to opening day. But if you missed our conversation on Patrick Corbin being named the starter on opening day for this rotation for the Nationals, you'll want to podcast that when we're done at thefandc.com. In our first segment, we broke that down. And that conversation and all of our Nats spring training talk is presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Put our team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. One of the young skill guys on Washington's offense is apparently being shopped and on the trading block. We'll tell you who next on Grant and Danny. I got a text from my wife. You guys can help me make a very important decision. This will be my contribution to the birthday party.
All right.
So my daughter turns 4 this weekend. Tomorrow, we're having a princess party.
The princess party.
There is a rainbow pinata. Mm-hmm. She's very excited about. There is goodie bags that she's been putting together for weeks with the little trinkets and things for people to take when they go home. They're playing Pass the Parcel, a hit game brought to us from the TV show Bluey on Disney.
Okay.
All kinds of activities are planned. I've had very little to do. My wife's been working very hard. There's all kinds of beautiful little desserts that she's made and done different colors with icing, right? Big princess party, Danny. I got a text message from my wife saying, I feel like we should be feeding the adults at the party tomorrow. Which makes sense.
Yes.
I've been at these parties. They're only a couple hours long, but you go and then you stand around and the kids are eating. It's like, what about me?
Yeah, it's not a... We're not talking about a catered event, gourmet, huge deal, but
are we?
Well, but like parents are standing around, like you know, we're just idiots for a little while, making small talk. Was that where you guys live? How long you been there? What school is she gonna go to? Really? Oh, well, here's where we are. Like it's just, you're making them do that, so you give them some nibble.
So she asked me, I was thinking Chick-fil-A or Subs,
mm-hmm.
And I ask you guys, what place? What would you be more excited to walk in and see? Maybe you know us. There are friends, but there are some kids from our class that don't know us. They're coming to the house for the first time. Would you be more steamed up to walk in and the Paulsons have some Chick-fil-A spread for you? Or maybe we do like the box Jersey Mike subs or something like that. I'm just picking random places.
I know.
Subs? Sure. Chick-fil-A would probably be the wheelhouse.
Yeah, I think either one is a win, but Chick-fil-A just has that special aura to it whenever you see it. You see Chick-fil-A nuggets, especially on a big platter, you get steamed up immediately.
That's why. So because Chick-fil-A is, it's finger foods, it's more versatile, You're not talking about getting a bunch of chicken sandwiches. You're probably going to get nuggets for the most part with some fries.
There's going to be some kind of a tray of nuggets, obviously, at a party. In my mind, though, I was thinking there's like a bunch of chicken sandwiches.
You get some Sammy's, too.
You can grab some of those.
But it's a little bit like someone's going to have like, you know, half of a Jersey Mike's, big old sub. You're not getting me to disrespect Jersey Mike's. I'm just saying simply for this where it's like people aren't around. It's not a full dinner. It's an afternoon. It's kind of a snack time.
But
this
I can get a roast beef provolone cheese.
Yep.
Salt, pepper, mayo. Cook the Mike's way?
The Mike's way.
You know how good the Mike's way is?
Yes,
you ever
I
had
do.
The Mike's way with the oils?
Yes.
You probably haven't had that before.
I'm surprised you've had it, by the way. That's flavor.
I'm sure I don't love the Mike's way. So what's your vote?
Chick-fil-A.
I guess it's 2-0. Ryan doesn't even matter at this point. But Ryan, what's your vote?
My vote right now, I would go Jersey Mike's subs. Jersey Mike's subs or whatever sub place you may go to. I think that screams party more so than Chick-fil-A. I think Chick-fil-A is kind of one of those things to where you're taking it home, it's just for you, and you're not going to share. But you can get that sub platter with all sorts of different kinds of cuts, and I think that is the play for a kid's party, for adults there also.
Adults walk in with their kid. Okay, take your jacket, buddy. Hey, put the coat down. Okay, you ready to go play? Yay! Look at that. All the dipping sauces lined up from Chick-fil-A.
I like a dipping sauce.
I'm sitting here now. I'm nibbling. There's a sandwich for me.
All right.
Waffle fries.
I'm going to say either works. Happy with both.
But Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A is my choice, though. That's my one seat.
Now, that probably means she'll do the opposite just because you're wrong in some way because you're a dude.
That's very true. So maybe I should play chess here and say go with sub.
What about a big salad that everyone shares?
You can't go wrong. Either way, I think we're winning and in the win column tomorrow. So I saw this via NFL Analysis Network, analysis of all 32 teams in the league. And I'm going to let you know that I'm not overly familiar with their work, but it seems credible enough to me that it is at least worth noting, with the prerequisite that this is not Schefter or Rap Sheet or somebody from NFL Network or ESPN. But they are saying that the Commanders, according to a former NFL executive that they've spoken with, are looking to move Dyami Brown in a trade. And the trade talks are active and could be heating up closer to the 2023 NFL draft. Now, I'm not sure, frankly, how much desire there's going to be for Dyami Brown, who has not done a ton in the NFL, because there is a pretty decent wide receiver market already. DeAndre Hopkins is available. We've seen Brandon Cooks moved. If you want Mike Evans, you could have him this offseason. Like, there are veterans, guys who have had a lot of success, players that could come in, could immediately start for you on a championship level team that are still available. But Brown should be enticing to somebody, I would think. He was a 23-year-old former third round pick, was the 82nd pick in the draft in 2021. He got 25 targets and 12 catches in his first season, and then this past year was even less involved. Over the course of 15 games, he had 14 targets, 5 grabs. He had the one monster game, remember, where he had the 75-yard touchdown and a 30-yard touchdown. If you take those two grabs out of the equation this year, he was like 3 for right around 40 yards the rest of the season. But oddly enough, in that Titans game, for some reason, he and Carson Wentz made nice music.
They hit it off, and it was lovely.
So I guess my curiosity is, where are we on Dyami Brown's role within the team? Regardless of this report, I mean, you wouldn't get a ton back. It'd be a late-round pick, probably, I would guess. But is he a guy that they should keep around? Is he more valuable than a later-round pick?
So these are the kinds of things that I would do that doesn't happen all that often, especially around here. I am cutthroat when it comes to these sorts of things. Now, Dyami Brown is a human being, so bear with me. This is going to be a poorly drawn analogy. But think of it like a car. You buy a car new. You use the car for however many years. And then when you sell it, you could look at it two ways. You're going, I'm selling this car at a loss. Actually, no. I got a couple years out of it. That use is worth something. And now I'm recouping something so that I can put it down towards my next car. Use that towards a player. Someone could go, you draft them in the third round and all you're getting back is a sixth rounder? You look at it as a loss. It's not a loss. It's a profit. You are getting something for a guy that may not have a big role. Your balance sheet is, do I have an extra pick, and is that more valuable than his 9 catches or 8 catches or whatever it was, or it's probably going to be this coming year?
I think two things can be true. I think it's a loss because you drafted him in the third round thinking he was going to be a good wide receiver, and he didn't turn out to be that guy for you, and now you're flipping him for almost nothing. So, I mean, just from a sheer football standpoint, that is a net L. But it's also a win if you compare it to his current role, which is, to your point, a down-the-depth chart wide receiver who's sparingly used, and you got a draft pick for it.
And this is what I would do. As soon as I go, this guy's probably not a huge part of my plans. I can listen, he's a different receiver than Dax Milne, but Dax Milne's going to have more impact than him this coming year. Gone. Instantly. I don't care anymore. Off my balance sheet, give me more picks. I'm stockpiling at all times.
Yeah, so I would hang on to De'Ami Brown, I think, because first and foremost, you just can't bank on your three wide receivers staying healthy. Okay, so while we love the McLaurin, Dotson, Samuel trio, Samuel missed all of his first entire season here. Dotson, in his only year to date with Washington, had a stretch for about 6 weeks where he couldn't post.
That's right.
McLaurin, knock on wood, has been pretty healthy in his time here, but you're talking about three players at a position where you're taking shots, running across the middle of the field, coming down awkwardly sometimes. Receivers miss time in a violent game. So if you want to get through the full year with a loaded wide receiver core and a productive offense like Eric Bieniemy plans on doing, you better have five guys, six guys you really like. So I would keep De'Ami Brown. I think he can play the McLaurin role as kind of that like X receiver. We have seen him play outside both sides of formations. He's done a little bit in the slot. I'm not sure that that is necessarily a strength for him. But I think he would be a down-the-depth chart fill-in for either Samuel or McLaurin on the boundary, and I would have no problem plugging him in that way. So yeah, I would keep him. More so than a sixth-round or a seventh-round pick, a third-rounder with speed who, again, got almost no opportunities last year. And in the one game where they basically said, hey, De'Ami, you got a chance today, he went and caught a 75-yard touchdown and had two scores in the game. I still think there's some game in there, some untapped resources. Now, is the question, is he likely to get much of a role? Of course not, because they're loaded with the three guys in front of them. But you're allowed to have good players otherwise. You mentioned Milne. Like, I'd much rather have De'Ami Brown than Dax Milne. I know they're two different guys, and Milne's probably a slot receiver who, behind Curtis Samuel would fill in a different spot than De'Ami Brown. But I'm not moving him, I don't think, yet. Or maybe at all. Like, I got no problem with your theory, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I would rather trade guys too soon than too late. I just think you got to get something back to make it worthwhile. And it's the question to me is always, am I better off with this person or what I get in return? And with De'Ami Brown, I think I'm better with the idea of him as a Aldrick Robinson light.
Well, it also depends on your evaluation of De'Ami Brown. Because I think he's an NFL player, but I don't think he's got much use. And even despite, Jahan Dotson missing all that time, he still had five catches last year. Now, I know the big game happened.
He didn't play much.
And I know, that's kind of my point, is he didn't play much.
Yeah.
The big game is the big game. I can't dispute that. That happened. That one-handed catch on that dime from Carson Wentz, maybe his best throw of the year, his second touchdown, was unbelievable. It was a great play. I sort of feel like, at the end of the day, he's a deep threat that usually doesn't get open deep. And I kind of don't really have time for that. But if you like him, you should definitely keep him over my plan. My point is, if I don't see the production, I don't really care for him. I don't really like him. I don't see much there. I'm spinning him and moving on to the next thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's intuitive. If you don't like the guy, you should trade him for a late round pick.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding.
But
you know what I mean? But yeah, I guess that's the debate, is what do they think of him at this point? And I don't know that we know.
Yeah, what do you think they think of him?
I mean, they drafted him, so at some point they really liked him.
Mm-hmm.
But you just said something that is, I think, smart, which is Jahan Dotson was not around for a little while, and it's not like, other than the Tennessee game, we really noticed him much. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you would think if you really liked him, okay, good. Here's your chance, kid. And you just start feeding him the football. That's not how it worked out.
But it was also in the middle of their "we're going to run the ball" renaissance
with
like one flanker and like nine fullbacks in the wishbone.
That is well said. I agree with you. It wasn't like they were spreading you out and slinging it, although that Titans game, they certainly did.
They did then.
I mean, 360 yards that day for Wentz.
Because that was Wentz.
Two touchdowns, yeah.
Then it's Chicago game.
Next
and then
week
it's,
was the Bears and then charade. It's, and
let's and, hand it off.
It was the run the ball fest.
Yep.
But the other question would be, what is their plan at wide receiver the rest of the offseason? Might they draft someone? I mean, if you're going to draft a De'Ami Brown-like player, who Eric Bieniemy likes or thinks is a great fit, then now he's expendable completely.
Yep.
Now you've been deemed unnecessary. you don't necessarily have to keep him around, I wouldn't think, at that point. We've got Ian Eagle joining the show in 20 minutes at 5 o'clock right here on Grant and Danny on The Fan. Ian Eagle at the top of the hour stops by. He is going to be on the call of two of the four NCAA tournament games tonight. He's on the call on TBS. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. I just pulled up the Nats giveaway schedule. I always get steamed up to kind of look at what they're giving out at the ballpark. So on opening day, March 30th, 105 first pitch, come for Patrick Corbin.
Mm-hmm.
Stay for the opening day City Connect t-shirt, which kind of looks fire. It's like the gray t-shirt from last year with the pink cherry blossoms.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're giving those out to 20,000 fans on opening day. It's a pretty good giveaway.
Very nice.
Fast forward yourself into mid-April. Josiah Gray bobbleheads on April 15th. You told me your son is a bobblehead guy.
He's a bobblehead guy.
You got to look up the dates. You got to find out when your bobbleheads are being given out. But a Josiah Gray bobblehead, wearing, by the way, the sick gray jersey with the pink cherry blossoms. It's kind of got a pink base to it, Josiah Gray.
Very nice.
The good-looking bobblehead. Going through some of the others here that I am intrigued by. How about a Nats fedora, Danny? You in on a Nats fedora?
No, but it's good that they're doing it for somebody.
First 20,000 fans in attendance on April 28th against the Pirates. Get yourself a fedora.
I'm just not a fedora guy. I can't.
I mean,
look
how
at
could
me.
You be?
Look at me. Could I wear a fedora? No, right?
You can't.
See?
I mean, you think I'm going to wear a fedora?
You need to.
I'm not going to.
By the way, you 100% could.
Here's this has Danny written all over it.
All right.
Saturday, May 20th, their Star Wars Day game.
Yep.
Star Wars dueling Hawaiian shirts. Dark side versus light side.
I'm going to need that.
Is that a thing in Star Wars, dark side and light side?
Yes. Two sides of the Force.
I know about the dark side of the Force. I've never heard of light side.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what the Jedi are, dude.
So what do you want? Do you want the black and red Hawaiian shirt with the red lightsabers and the white helmets, or do you want the light side?
I'm going to be honest with you. I can't choose. I think I need both. How do I get both? Who do I talk to?
I think you buy a ticket, you walk through the gate,
yep.
You get the ticket, you put it in your bag.
I saunter in
and
there.
And then you walk back out with another ticket that you've purchased, and you go back in and get another one. That would be my guess.
Okay. Like, if I have a guest, and I make sure they get the light side of the Force, and the other guy gets
side,
the dark side?
The light side one has Yoda and Chewie on it.
Chewie's on the light side of the Force? Chewie's not a Force user. Will you check that again for me, please?
Is that not Chewie right there all over that shirt?
Yeah, that is Chewie. He's the... What? All right, this is basically...
He's on the light side of the Force.
Well, he's a good guy, but he's not a Force user, Grant. What are we talking about here?
I don't think Yoda's a Force user either, according to
first
some people.
First of all, how dare you say that? Take that back.
It depends on...
Just take it back.
It depends on what version.
Oh, my God. I know you're doing a bit, but take it back.
No, I'm not doing a bit. It depends
Yoda's not a Force user.
It depends on what's canon.
Yoda.
Did you hear what I said?
Yes, and I loved it.
What's canon, I said? I don't even know what that's.
You know exactly what it means. You've heard me say it so many times. So here's what happens. When we'll have a pregame, I'm sure. Like, we're getting ready to play a game. We're so fat and we sit down.
By the way, Hawaiian shirts.
In.
I know that you're happy about this.
Yes.
Here's what you'll never see me wear in my life is a Hawaiian shirt.
Never.
You know who looks terrible in Hawaiian shirts? Everybody. But you know who particularly looks terrible are fat people.
You know who looks great? Dads at barbecues. Give me all of them.
I hate Hawaiian shirts.
I love them. I want 100.
Andy Reid does that bit, and yeah. I'm like, what are you doing, bro?
Leaning in. That's what he's doing. He's like, now he knows who he is. He just wants a burger. Now, Yoda is the Force user. Just so we're clear. I know you don't care about that. But usually what happens is there'll be some sort of like dork type discussion. For Daris, I have to like cater it to Marvel.
You got a Screech Kid's arm hug doll in June.
Oh. What does that do?
I'm not sure yet.
Hugs the arm. So Daris, it has to be Marvel. Otherwise, Daris isn't interested either. He just looks at his computer.
I'm listening.
But whenever there's like a dork thing, Grant does what he's doing right now where he just looks down.
Racing President's bobblehead dolls.
And finds stuff
June
like
17.
This. Right? And just does it, just totally punches out. and then waits for us to be done, and then kind of comes back into the conversation.
This is weird. Harry Potter house scarves. Why are they doing that?
Can you show them to me?
Yeah, July 8th, Harry Potter house scarves.
Would you get?
I would do Gryffindor, just because it's the only one I've ever heard of.
Of course you would.
But what is that about, do you think?
It's people are doing a Harry Potter giveaway. They're doing a Harry Potter tie-in. I don't want Slytherin.
Why don't you?
Well, that's where all the bad guys are. I could do a Ravenclaw situation.
Darius, I got you. You want your big day? You want to know when you got to be at the ballpark?
I mean, I got to be at the ballpark all the time because it's the Nats, my favorite team.
Saturday, July 22nd, they're taking on the San Francisco Giants. C.J. Abrams bobblehead.
Okay, silly. What kind of bobblehead is it? Marvel or something?
Nope, it's just a C.J. Abrams bobblehead.
Got it.
Darius, here's one for you.
He likes bobbleheads. You all like right. C.J. Abrams? He's the best player on the team.
I do like C.J. Abrams.
He's the most exciting player in the lineup. You like him or you don't?
So my big development here, they do their, the Nets do a media ballpark tour. We couldn't do it because we have this radio show that we have to do. We have to be sitting here. Three new food options that are of note to gentlemen like Grant and gentlemen like Danny. Like to hear him. Here you go.
Okay, hang on. Yeah. I want to get to those.
Okay.
I need to tell Ryan about his big night. You ready, Ryan?
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
August 31st. You got any plans?
I don't.
Cancel them that you don't have.
Okay.
Okay. Grant is so pleased with himself right now, by the way. He's cracking himself up over there.
Special event ticket required. Ladies night.
Nice. Let's go.
All the ladies. All the ladies. Where's our Beyonce, Darius?
All the
Ryan,
single ladies.
Ryan and all the single ladies at Nats Park.
I'm in.
August 31.
There we go. I'll be there.
Okay. Go ahead, Danny. Tell us about the food.
So there's two. Two new ones that I want to highlight here. Number one, taking over the DMV, if I can say that, Swizzler. There's already a Swizzler station at Capital One Arena, which is immensely popular, right? Right by sections 106, 107. There's one in our neighborhood. It's burgers, fries. It's simple. Outstanding.
It's
there's a
burger.
Swizzler. Yeah. Sections 106, 133, 20. Capo Italian Deli, guy. Capo Italian Deli.
Now, this one's kind of controversial because it's replacing our old friend's Hard Times. So I've been seeing a lot of flack from people on Twitter, so that one's controversial.
That's right by us as well.
That's section 107.
Okay, so what's at the deli?
It's like your Italian cold cut type situation.
Are they doing
some sandies? Yeah. It's going right there, right in our section. So when we're in the little red box, and I turn my little head slightly to the side, what's that? What is that? It's Capo Italian Deli staring me right in the face.
I'm okay with that.
You're going to see me there.
Is there one more?
No, those are the two I wanted to highlight.
Do you have anything else, though?
No, that's all I got.
But there was three. I wanted to know about the third one.
The third one? It was really just two.
But you said three.
It was really just two. Well, the third one is the Roaming Roosters back, section 238. I had heard through my sources, okay, that they may not be back in. I can't reveal who they are. I'm just saying. They're not the same sources as our guy Charles Gasparino. I'm not talking to the same people. All right? I'm just saying. I heard there was a chance they were going to be back in there, but they are Roaming Roosters back, section 238.
Okay. I think I'm happy about a possible sub at the ballpark.
Dude, that place is really good.
That's big. That's very good news.
Yeah.
That's good. Were you still talking about Star Wars, or can I start listening
to you
again?
No, it's over.
Okay.
It's been
know
over.
When I could take off my, it's like in Maury when you have to go to backstage and put the headphones on while they talk to the woman, and then they bring you out to see if you're the father. I didn't know when I could take the headphones off. That's all.
Is Maury still going on, by the way? I haven't seen a Maury episode in forever.
I don't think Maury's still going on, but I think shows just like that with different people that are saying you're not the father are doing it.
The thing that I could never understand on Maury, how could the dudes fall for the sexy decoy? You're coming to Maury Povich on a show about cheating and paternity and faithfulness. You're not there because everything's fine. They're not doing a fashion makeover episode. They're there because something's amiss. And you think the sexy decoy's there for you in the green room?
Oh, you mean when they're like, look what our cameras caught 1 hour ago.
Yes, the sexy decoy goes in there with the blurred out face and is really into him, and they start kissing and stuff. How do dudes fall for the sexy decoy?
Maury's last episode was September of 2022.
There you go.
So it is no longer on
the air. Had a hell of a run.
Good run. That's a heck of a run.
It really is. That's a big run.
Randomly shows up over at Nats Park and DC events a lot.
He's a DC guy.
Local guy.
Yeah.
Maury Povich.
Started in 91 to 2022. How about that?
Ian Eagle will be on the call of two of the four NCAA tournament games tonight. He joins us next on Grant and Danny.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.